Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, it's the beloved Hank Landsberg. You know him as Henry Engineering. You know those blue boxes that solve all kinds of acute problems in your radio station? Well, Hank is on talking about some interesting history and what's next for Henry Engineering. Next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the Ruby console from Lavo, see Lavo and your future at lavo.com/twrt. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And this week, we're talking about some of the boxes that help make the radio station happen, and TV stations, too. I've seen these boxes everywhere. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, as usual. This is episode 462, so I've been around for almost all of them. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, which also is my office. I want to thank the Telos Alliance for giving me an extra hour to do the podcast and for outfitting the studio here pretty nicely. We've got a Zip One here. We've got a good old-fashioned router selector panel. We've got a what used to be called a ProStream, now called the ZipStream R1. These are just some of and we have the Infinity IP intercom system right down here, too, and some more Telos goodies. So thanks a lot, Telos, for helping make the studio here possible. Well, Chris Tobin is going to be trying to join us, but they've had some kind of a major internet failure over in his end of the world. I'm sure he is working diligently to kind of fix that up. I'm watching my chat box to see if he shows up in the show today. So hopefully he'll be here. But I'll tell you who is here, our guest. Let's go right to him. I am so pleased to bring you my friend, and I feel like I've known him since 1984 anyway, Hank Landsberg of Henry Engineering. Hank, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Well, thank you, sir. Glad to be here, and thanks for inviting me, and it's going to be a fun and informative show. I've got a bunch of toys in the background there for show and tell, and I'll warn you, over to my left here, I have a whiteboard, so there could be a quiz later.
Oh, that might be fun.
You never know.
Hey, I got to ask the obvious question. Hank is often short for Henry. Is Henry Engineering based on the name Hank?
Yeah, my first name is actually Henry, legally, but I've gone by Hank forever. So
sure.
That's what I go by, but my first name is actually Henry, so that's where it comes from.
I would analogize that to Henry Aaron and Hank Aaron, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I first started, I was concerned that I would get confused with a company called Henry Radio. And at the time, they only made ham radio gear. So I figured, that's not going to be a problem because they don't make broadcast gear. Well, a few years later, they did. But and occasionally I get an odd phone call here and there trying to get spare transmitter parts for a Henry FM transmitter or something, which is the wrong phone number to call, but whatever, we'll deal with it.
So, anyway. I've told the story on some previous episode, but I was charged with fixing and then for a while taking care of a Henry Engineering, not you, FM transmitter. And yeah, it was kind of okay. They tried to fit too many watts in too small a box, but you know, that's what ham radio people do. Let's just say to fix the problem, I had to find about a 6 kilovolt capable brick to float a choke on that was short of the case, you know, short of the frame.
That happens.
And that was on the 4th. That was on the 4th of July one year. Oh my goodness, what memories! I know. We're going to get into not only a little history about Hank Landsberg and his involvement with radio, prior to Henry Engineering and how Henry Engineering came about. And then we're going to talk, of course, about some of the technologies that go into Hank's products to make our lives as engineers much easier. Sometimes you need a box to make things work and hook things up instead of lashing it together yourself, you know. You can use Hank's technology to do that. Our show,
Why
This Week in
Reel, right?
That's right. Better mousetraps all around. You've got a lot of them. Hey, our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends at Angry Audio. Angry Audio, you know, we talked about them for some time about how they make these gizmos, little boxes to help you do things around the studio. And now you may have also heard that Radio Systems and Studio Hub have closed their doors after many, many years of serving the broadcast industry. Well, guess what? Those adapters that you know and love for Studio Hub, they're not going away. They still exist. They're made in the same factory by the same people on the same equipment, but they no longer say Studio Hub on them. They say Angry Audio. And they make, this is my favorite, the one that has a female RJ45, and it goes into, you know, whatever connector you need. This one goes to two XLR connectors. These are the male XLR, have the same thing here, RJ45 female, into a couple of female XLRs. I like that kind. And then, of course, I like to, if I got a short run, I like to use the little bitty 1 foot RJ Cat5 jumper cable to hook things together. But you may need to go longer than just, you know, 1 foot, right? So you can attach any length of Cat5 cable that you want to. And whether we're talking about AES-EBU audio, like you might do with this single jobber right here, or whether we're talking about analog, left-right balanced analog audio, either one works absolutely great over virtually any length of Cat5 cable. So you can go to the website, angryaudio.com, angryaudio.com, and you'll find basically the same selection of audio adapter cables that you've been used to for years under the name Studio Hub. I want to point something out, though, to you that's going to be really nice. The price. Angry Audio has dropped the price of the adapter cables you know and love by about 25%. So you get 25% off the same connectors and cables that you used to purchase. And one more thing, right now, and this is while supplies last, you get a free 7 foot RJ45 Cat5 patch cable with the purchase of any of the female style, this kind of Studio Hub compatible adapter. So these are Angry Audio, but if you, for everyone you order, ask your dealer for your free 7 foot cable. And if the dealer goes, huh? Tell them to go check with Angry Audio. You check with Angry Audio at angryaudio.com. Angryaudio.com. Thanks so much to Angry Audio for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. We'll be right back.
Calrex Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I.O. gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot, Calrec, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Go to calrec.com/twert. Hey, I just got a message, Hank. Hank Landsberg is our guest, the Hank in Henry Engineering. You've known and loved his products for years. And if you don't, we're going to send you to the website, because you're going to want to know about that. Hank, a friend of the show, an engineer from New Jersey named Nick Straka. Nick just posted on Facebook a comment. He says, Hank has created products that solve acute problems for a reasonable cost that tend not to break. A win for everyone. How about that for an endorsement?
Thank you.
I think that's the way most people feel about your stuff, Hank. We
acute
ought to start
problems and ugly ones too.
Yeah, I was thinking the same dad joke. Yes, exactly. When we talked yesterday, you started out by telling me kind of the story of how you got started in radio. As I asked, were you an engineer before Henry Engineering? And so why don't you give us a little background on that? And I'll post the link for our producer to go to the, that Drake website here in just a second.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. My, I guess my real, first job in, in real radio that was, you know, paying me a paycheck was starting in 74. I was hired as chief engineer at Drake Chenault. And from and hopefully some of you remember that we were a radio syndication company producing recorded music format tapes for automated radio stations that, of course, ran on reel-to-reel tape recorders and cart machines and, you know, other analog stuff like that. So anyway, I was a chief engineer at Drake Chenault for about 14, 15 years, starting in 74. There we go. That's the website. And if you're interested in learning the ancient technology that we used back in those days to produce literally thousands of reels of tape, go to the Tribute website that I've had up for quite a few years. It's simply drakechenault.org. So it's drakechenault.org. And click on Behind the Scenes, and you'll see all the details of how we did what we did. It's amazing that in those days of analog automation, the station would have to shell out probably about $50,000 to get an automation system, and that's $50,000 in 1974. To do what we can do on a laptop and free software today. So it's amazing that we did what we did with the technology that we had at the time. But first, I have another little tidbit for you. You wanted me to come up with a tip of the day or something kind of like that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do a riddle. I'm gonna pose a riddle to our viewers.
Well, ask the first part of it now and give the answer at the end of the show. How about that?
Right. That's what I'll do.
Okay, good.
So we'll go back even way before Drake Chenault. Go back to about, let's see, 68 or 9 when I was in high school. I earned a little bit extra money by fixing TVs in my parents' garage, you know.
Okay.
And of course, this was the late 60s, so virtually all the TVs I got were black and white. But occasionally, I got a color TV. And on the rare occasion that I had a color TV that needed convergence adjusted on the CRT, you know, where you set the red, blue, and green guns to all line up and all that stuff.
Right.
I could only do convergence adjustments Monday through Friday between 11:30 and noon. Why? So that's the riddle.
We'll have the answer at the end of the show.
We'll have the answer. That's right. We will. Why could I only do convergence between 11:30 and noon, Monday through Friday?
Okay. All right. We'll find out at the end of the show.
Yes, we will.
We don't have to do convergence anymore, do we? I remember, you know, when TV stations, of course, you had color cameras with three tubes or four sometimes, and they had to, do all the convergence before each show.
And if the wind blew, you had to redo it. You know, none of that stuff was very stable. Okay, so what should we? Where should we go from here?
I wondered if you could, you know, probably more than half of our audience on This Week in Radio Tech remembers Drake Chenault, but for the maybe I'm going to guess 35-40% who don't, give us just a quick, what was Drake Chenault and why did it exist, and along with competing companies to Drake Chenault?
Well, what happened was in the early days of FM radio, early meaning the 60s up through the early 70s, FM, nobody took it very seriously. There weren't that many listeners, and the stations that were on FM were broadcasting mostly elevator music, and they weren't making very much money. They would simply simulcast their AM station. So they'd have the same programming on AM and FM. Yeah. Well, in the early 70s, sometime, the FCC changed the rules, and they said if you have an FM license and you want to keep it, you have to program that station independently of your AM. You can't just simulcast the same programming. So suddenly we had thousands of FM stations who had very few advertisers, not a whole lot of audience, not much money, but now they had to come up with independent programming. So automation was the answer to that. Instead of having to go out and hire disc jockeys and program directors and all that rigmarole, it would be a whole lot easier and cheaper for the station if they could just bring in an automation system and call up a company like Drake Chenault or TM or Bonneville Programming, or there were several others. And for a monthly fee, Drake Chenault would send you tapes every week. And that would take care of most of your programming. All you had to do was add traffic, weather, and commercials. And if everything was running right, it sounded quite live. It sounded really good. And the programming was probably better than what the stations could do by themselves on a low budget. So that's where the automation syndication industry came from, out of the need to provide low-cost programming for all these FM radio stations. So without going into all the details and stuff, but we shipped out, I think, if I remember right, we shipped out about 1,000 10-inch reels of tape every week. We had, at the peak, I think we had a little over 300 client radio stations, and every week they needed to get new tapes fed to them with, you know, the current hits of the week. So we were a giant programming factory with about a half a dozen different music formats, top 40, MOR, country, soul, easy listening, and so on, in different variations. And the thing about Drake Chenault was they were kind of thrifty when it came to building their first batch of studios, which were in use when I got there in 74. And instead of spending money on professional grade equipment that had balanced inputs and outputs and all that stuff, a lot of the gear they had in their studios was hi-fi gear, turntable preamps, tape recorders, other stuff like that, equalizers and whatnot. A lot of it was unbalanced, but the consoles were balanced. So one of the things that I had to do was build these interface boxes to interface all this unbalanced hi-fi gear with the consoles. And after building, you know, a couple of dozen of these things from scratch, the light bulb went on. And I thought, I wonder if anybody else has this problem too. And it turned out they did. So that's where the Matchbox came from. I sent a picture earlier of the original three Henry Engineering products. That's that black and white picture I sent a while back. Anyway, I get asked all the time. There it is.
Yeah. I get asked all the time. Oh, I remember each of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the three original products. The Matchbox is on the right. On the left is a thing called a universal turntable controller, which was a interface for remotely controlling the start-stop function of a Technics SP10 or SP15 turntable. And then the thing in the middle is the Super Relay. That was its original version that handled your on-the-air light control and all that sort of thing. So those are the three original products. And at shows and stuff, I get asked all the time, how many of these things have you made? You know, so I just a few minutes ago, I went back through our accounting records and whatnot. And here are some statistics just for fun. To date, we have shipped about 70,000 Matchboxes and 10,000 Super Relays.
Wow.
And Matchboxes in general account for probably about half of all the stuff we've sold. So if you take the Matchbox number and you double it, I think we've probably sold somewhere around 130,000 to 140,000 widgets since 1982. So there's a lot of them out there.
You know, it's funny. I actually understand why you don't have an exact count. We tried to do the same thing at Telos regarding the Telos Zephyr, you know, the good old ISDN codec, right?
Yeah.
And we about 20,000, but we don't have an exact count for some reason over the years.
Yeah. Sometimes you lose track. And so I'll apologize right now for littering the industry with so many blue boxes. But as long as people enjoy using them, hey, I'm fine. I'll keep on making them. That's cool with me. So anyway, that's where the idea for the Matchbox came from. And then I just, you know, kind of started adding more stuff and more stuff. A lot of the sometimes product ideas were suggested to me by engineers, friends. I'm sure a lot of you do you know Tom Koza?
I do, yeah.
He's an LA area engineer. He's been around for years and years, very dear friend. And the Super Relay was his idea. And a few other things along the way have been his idea or other friends or other engineers that have called me and says, you know, what we really need is, and on and on and on, or you make this thing and it's pretty close, but what we really need is something that does something a little bit different. So, you know, whatever. That's where, you know, a lot of these crazy ideas come from.
And you know, of course, everybody, well, but start with this. You probably have gotten way more ideas than you had time to develop, or your feeling for the marketplace said, you know, that's a good idea, but I'd probably sell five of those, right?
Yeah, that can happen. And I've had cases where when a friend suggests an idea, because the person is a friend, it's hard for me to look at it objectively. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times I've run with it, even though I had a little voice in the back of my head saying, yeah, I don't know if anybody really needs this. But since the idea came from a friend and I didn't want to, you know, disappoint him or whatever, I went ahead and did it and it bombed. But what the hell? That happens sometimes.
Yeah, so I'll make it. You know, good news. Chris Tobin has joined in. Chris, are you camera ready yet?
Let's see if he's there.
Maybe not yet. Oh, there he is.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, okay. We'll get back to you in a second. So I'll just make it official. My request is that, and with apologies to my friends at Angry Audio, because this would eliminate some of these adapters. Oh, no, I don't want to hurt my friends at Angry Audio. But if you made the Matchbox not only with XLR ins and outs, but parallel RJ45, so I can take, you know, I could use the Studio Hub standard and plug that in to the, you know, to the balanced side of a Matchbox, and then just run me a Cat 5 cable over to you know, an AOIP interface box like the Telos Axia X node, and then I get to eliminate this. But apologies to Angry Audio.
All right, I'll look at it. I'll look into that. There's enough room on the back to squeeze in another connector.
Oh yeah, there is that problem. There is that problem. Okay, yeah. Chris is good to go. Hey, Chris Tobin, welcome in. Glad you're here.
Well, hello, gentlemen. I hope you can hear me. Okay, sorry for the delay.
Yep. Excellent. Yep, perfectly. Chris, can you believe we got Hank Landsberg on? I just think it's great.
I love it. It's great.
Thank you.
It's unbelievable.
Welcome.
Every possible need for something in a broadcast facility, Hank has had a fine job of finding a solution from the early days of the little boxes to now the most sportscaster style things. And it's great, man. I just love it.
Hank was just telling us, you think you've shipped about 70,000 of the Henry Matchboxes. Was that about right?
Yeah, that's pretty close to what I think is right. Yeah. So there's a ton of them out there.
I want to ask you about the other end of the spectrum. Yeah, Super Relays. Let me ask first. All you engineers out there who've installed Super Relays, which is probably most of us, how many of you have never used anything more of the super relay than the AC output to relight your tally light, and maybe one of the Form C contacts, and never used any of the rest of them. Because I never used any more than just one of the Form C contacts. Hank, have you gotten feedback about that?
Well, back in the olden days, you know, like 80s and 90s, people needed all that stuff to mute the EBS receiver and mute the phone bell in the phone, and sometimes mute the speakers, and turn off the intercom or the door buzzer and all that other weird stuff.
Good
but
points.
These days, so many functions of the studio are all kind of vertically integrated that all those control issues have kind of gone away. And of course, now hardly anybody using 110 volt incandescent light bulb on the air lights anyway. They're mostly LEDs. So, We have a new thing coming out here in a couple of months that's going to be a sort of a junior version of a super relay that'll have LED light control. The super relay does do LED light control, but we really don't need the AC output anymore because nobody's making AC lights anymore.
Well, I got to point out this on air light. Actually, I think it may be fluorescent, but the LED lights. Oh yeah. I guess they don't take one. There's some that can take 110 and they, bump it down to whatever the LEDs need. So I'd hate if you eliminated that.
We won't eliminate it. We'll just, I'll just add this other product. That'll be the LED only version, but we'll keep on making the super relay just as it is. Because.
I gotta ask, we've talked about the successful product. Are you willing to tell us about something that just really bombed, that just nobody ever wanted?
Yeah. This is a good example of what I was saying before. About, 10 years ago, a good friend of mine, Mike Callahan, who was an LA area engineer at Kiss FM. Yeah. He passed away a few years ago. Anyway, he came to me with an idea for a thing that we called the stereo audio monitor, that was a way of looking at both channels of audio with one row of LEDs. And depending on the color, that's how you could tell if it was looking at left channel or right channel, and you could see the phase correlation between the two and the balance between the two. And I thought, that's a pretty cool idea. So we built it. It worked really well. It showed you left and right levels, and it also showed you sum and difference levels simultaneously, so you could see main channel and sub channel. So we made the product. It worked great. Nobody needed it. It was a solution in search of a problem. So that happens now and then. That's just the way, you win some, you lose some. So that was that was an example of a friend of mine coming to me with an idea that I just looked at it and thought, it's cool. Let's do it, because Mike was a good friend. And it didn't turn out to be commercially successful, but it was fun to do anyway.
Overall, that sounds like a product that I would describe as a bit too cool for the room.
Yeah, kind of. I said, it was a solution in search of a problem.
Oh, well, like engineers like Mike Callahan would love that. And there are other engineers who would, too. But most engineers, I look at my mod monitor. I got metering. I don't need that. Now, back in the days of tape, though, phase correlation was kind of important if it was way out of whack.
Oh, Yeah. So. And I even had a few disc mastering engineers interested in it, because the sum and difference indication, when you're cutting vinyl, that equates to the sum equates to the lateral modulation of the stylus, and the difference equates to the vertical modulation of the stylus. And that was something that they need to pay attention to. But how many people are cutting vinyl these days? I could count them on one hand. So that didn't save the product.
Hey, it's time for our usual mid-show break, and we have a special deal today. Instead of hearing me rattling off and prattling on about a terrific product called the Henry Sportscaster, Chris and Hank and I are all going to talk about it while we look at the product on the video, and that is the Henry Sportscaster. By the way, the spot is actually courtesy also of our friends from Broadcasters General Store, and they are a great place for you to pick up a Henry Sportscaster or any Henry Engineering product. But if we could, let's have a look at the webpage, this picture of the Henry Sportscaster. And Hank, what? Okay, I get what this thing does, but I think it does more than I realize. Why don't you tell us about the Sportscaster?
Okay, this product was something that I actually had the idea for about 7 or 8 years ago. It was about that time, 7, 8 years ago, that we created this product, the Sports Pod. The Sports Pod is, let me get it in the middle there. There we go. It's used for play-by-play announcers, you know, doing live telecasts of sporting events. So what this thing does is it lets the announcer turn his mic on and off. There's a cough button. There's a talkback facility. And there's headphone mixing, so the talent can set up a mix of the local audio plus the IFB. These things have been, you know, pretty successful, and they've been on the market for about 6-7 years. But it was really intended to be a radio product for radio station use. Well, about a year and a half ago, I discovered that there's a huge market or a huge interest at the high school and middle school level for doing video webcasts of sporting events. Right. This is something that didn't exist, you know, 10 years ago before the internet. But now we have middle schools and high schools that want to do live video coverage of football games, basketball games, and so on. So I got a call from a producer who produces these kinds of video programs, and he said, "I just discovered your Sports Pod. This thing is great. This is just what I need. But for video, we have a bunch of other needs that aren't being addressed. There's a lot of inexpensive video gear that's available, cameras." All the stuff that used to be exorbitantly expensive, like video switchers, effects generators, slow-mo recorders, and all that, all those functions could be done on a laptop with software. But as usual, they forgot about the audio. This guy, his name is Rick Vanderwielen, he called me and he said, "Well, the sports part is really cool, but we need a bunch of other functions to do a successful video production of a sporting event." And so we talked and talked and talked. And it turns out that there's actually three distinct functions that are necessary for doing video coverage of sporting events. You have to be able to mix the mics. Okay. That's the easy part. Any mic mixer can do that. But you also have a lot more people on the broadcast team than what you normally have in radio. With TV, you know, you have your talent calling the game. So you have a main announcer. Maybe you have a color guy, maybe a statistician or a spotter. Then you also have a guy down on the field, a field reporter. And you have camera operators. You got a whole camera crew out there of various, camera positions. And all those people need to have headphones on so they can hear what's going on, but they need to hear something different in the headphones. I mean, what Right. the talent hears is different from what the camera operator hears, and that's different from what the field announcer hears, and you have to have a producer controlling the whole show, and he needs to have headphones with a whole different mix for him. So now you need to be able to create three or four different headphone mixes consisting of program audio, talkback, intercom, whatever. But everybody needs something different. And then to make things even more complicated, you need to have an intercom in this system, and the intercom needs to be integrated with the headphone audio so that the talent can talk back to the producer so the producer can talk to the talent or the spotter, so the producer can talk to the field reporter down on the field, and so the producer can give direction to the camera operators. So now you have, in addition to needing three or four different headphone mixes, now you also have at least three more intercom channels so that the producer can talk to all these different members of the team. And the team needs to be able to talk to each other. And the spotter needs to be able to give player statistics into the headphones of the guy who's calling the game. So this gets to be kind of complicated. And the way these guys were doing this was trying to use a mixer and then adding in an intercom system and a separate headphone mixer for each talent. And for the camera guys would have a different headphone mixer. It was just a nightmare of equipment and a big rat's nest of wiring. So after we went round and round and round for weeks with his long laundry list of, I need a thing that does this, 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 and this, that's where the Sportscaster came from. So what the Sportscaster does, and I'll pick one up. We just came out with these nifty little stands for the
sports pods. A bale on the bottom.
Yeah, a bale, right. So let me get close enough here so you can see it.
There we go. Yeah.
There we go. So, oops, everything is backwards on my screen.
I know.
So we have different sections that do different things. This section here, starting here and going over to about here, this is your mixing section. This is where you mix the mics. And this is real simple. It's just a simple mic mixing function. Nothing unusual. Like I said, any mic mixer could do this. So you have inputs for three sports pods, so you can have three talent on the air. Plus your field reporter has his own input. And then two more inputs that you can use for a crowd mic, a PA announcer, or whatever. Okay? That's even better.
Oh, there we go.
That's even better. That's easier to see. So then as we move from left to right, let's go all the way to the right, the extreme right.
Yeah.
At the very extreme right, we have where the producer plugs in his talkback mic and his headphones. Okay? And then to the left of that, there's three blue knobs. That's where the producer sets up his headphone mix. And he can listen to program, intercom, or the cue bus. And you'll notice that below each knob, there is a left, center, right switch. That lets the producer put each one of those sources in the left, center, or right channel of his headphones. That's how he can keep track of what he's hearing. So if he puts program in the middle, then he knows when he hears something coming in the middle of his head, you know, that's main program. He could put intercom in the left and cue in the right so that when somebody's hollering at him in the right ear, he knows that, you know, that's cue audio or that's intercom audio. So anyway, that's what those three knobs are for. And then we move over to the left again, three more knobs that say field cam phones. This is where you set up the headphone mix for the field reporter and the camera operators. And to the left of that is the intercom. This is where the producer can selectively talk to various members of the broadcast team. If he hits the pods button, he can talk into the headphones of the talent using sports pods. And his talkback audio will go into their headphones, but nobody else's. If the producer needs to talk to the field reporter, he hits the field button in the middle. And then if he needs to give direction to the camera crew, he hits the camera button so he can call the shots to the camera operators. So he can tell them, you know, camera two, you know, follow the runner on third base. We think he's going to lead off and make it for home or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
as you can tell, I'm a big sports fan. But anyway, there's a huge amount of functionality and flexibility built into this thing, even though the whole thing takes up one rack unit of space. It, you know, it eliminates a whole carload of gear. And so this lets the producer control the mix of what's on the air. He can control what everybody's hearing in their headphones, so everybody hears what they need to hear without getting distracted by chatter from other communications that they don't need to hear. And it allows the producer to have intercom communication with everybody as needed. The other cool thing is, and if we go back to the live camera, there we go. Each one of the sports pods has a talkback button.
Yeah.
And right there. And this lets the talent talk back to the producer. It also lets the talent talk to their neighbor. Like the color guy can talk offline to the main announcer, or the spotter can gives player statistics to main guy that's calling the game. And what is kind of cool about this whole system, interesting that we were talking about, you know, the radio systems and radio hub.
I was going to ask how they hook up with each other.
Yep, yeah. It uses Cat 5, and it uses the same studio hub protocol. So if you've got, a couple of, I'm getting my wires all tangled up here. If you've got, let's say you have a main announcer and a color guy. Well, you just daisy chain two of these things together with Cat 5.
Oh, that's how that works. Okay.
Yeah. And the Cat 5 carries power. Carries power, carries headphone audio between the units, carries talkback and intercom between the units and back to the producer. So all these functions happen right through this single Cat 5 cable. So it's really quick and easy to put the system together. The headphone mixing on each sports pod lets each announcer set up his own headphone mix the way he wants it.
That's it. So, that local control, it sounds like you could label that more me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you can. In fact, there's a button back here. There are announcers who don't want to hear the whole mix. They just want to hear themselves. Imagine
of course,
that, right?
Why not?
Yes. So there is a button back there that instead of listening to program, you push the me button, and it puts him and only him into his headphones instead of the main program mix.
It's like a personal echo chamber or isolation booth.
Exactly. That's right. He doesn't want to hear anybody else. He just wants to hear himself.
On the back, I see you've got mic inputs, headphone outputs, and things like that. Yeah. So you could easily take a sports headset that had XLR mic and quarter-inch headphone and just plug them right in the back there, or separate mic headphone, whichever you want. Yeah.
Here's what the back looks like. Just standard, you know, mic in, mic out, and then the Cat 5 linking, and you can just daisy chain, you know, two or three of these things as you need them. These can also be used without the sportscaster as an independent system, in which case then you use the headphone inputs over here. And then you're talent headphones plug in over here. Phone, and you know, so you can use it any way you want. But when it's used with the sportscaster, majority of the audio power and talkback and intercom all goes over this cable. So it's really easy to install.
I want to see if Chris Tobin agrees with this sentiment. Hank, where was this product in 1982
when
I needed it?
Yeah.
And except for the RJ45 connector and maybe some newer ICs, I think that product, you know, could have been made in the 80s.
It could. Oh, sure. There's no reason why it couldn't have been. The reason I had the idea for this product almost 10 years ago, and the reason I didn't do it was I began to discover that most radio stations don't do their own remotes. They contract them out to an independent, you know, engineer, which means that he's buying the equipment out of his own pocket. And this product ended up being, you know, it's kind of a pricey product. It's around, let's see, Sportscaster, about $1,200. And I was a little, I wasn't sure that the average independent contract guy would want to shell out that kind of money. So I didn't go ahead with it until I heard from the video guy about a year and a half ago. And when we opened up the possibility of selling these whole this system to schools that are doing video production and video webcasts of sporting events, that's a whole other market. So I figured, well, okay, this is by adding all these other video features and functionality, that opens up a whole other market for the product. And then it became viable, you know, because originally my original idea was going to be radio only, and there wasn't enough market there. But by adding all this other stuff, it becomes a video product. That's a whole different thing. If you want to be just blown away with what school kids are doing, take a look at a website called School Video News, schoolvideonews.com.
All right.
I wish they had these toys when we were in school.
I'll put that link in the show notes in case people are just listening right now. Then go back and look at the show notes.
It's amazing. You remember when we were in school, you know, you'd have the Monday morning announcements coming over the speaker.
That was,
you know,
it,
by
the
principal. Yeah. Well, now 7th graders are doing a version of Good Morning America.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
You won't believe it. It's amazing. And it's a great way to teach journalism, writing, teamwork, photography, production, all this stuff. And kids 12, 13 years old are doing really professional, polished shows. And it's a whole part of their curriculum now.
You were hearkening back to the day when I was in high school and you were in high school a few years before I was, when the most sophisticated piece of gear in the high school said Duquesne on it.
Yeah. Deal. 16mm projectors.
And Chris Tobin, are you old enough to remember mimeographs? I mean, as the form of, that was the email of the day, right?
Yes.
That was the
mimeograph. Yes. That's right. Handle on the machine, you turn it around. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and then they became motorized.
Kids that are vaping now, they have nothing on us. We had mimeograph sheets. You'd hold those things up and, you know.
People would curl if you didn't write.
As we've read recently, it's a good thing that things were like they were, because we never would have had the song Smoking in the Boys' Room. It would have been Vaping in the Unisex Bathroom.
There
you go. Doesn't have the same ring to it. Hey, we're going to take our last quick break. And when we come back, I wish this show was 2 hours long, because, man, Hank's got so much more stuff and I have more questions to ask. We're going to have Hank back sometime, you know, in the next year or so, to get Hank back to talk, because I got unanswered questions. And Chris hasn't had a chance to talk hardly at all. But we got to take this quick break, and we're going to come back with the answer to Hank's riddle. Do you remember what it was about why he could only adjust convergence on weekdays between 11:30 and noon? Did I get that time right, Hank?
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
I actually researched this a few days ago.
And we'll be right back after this word from Lavo. Hang on.
Okay.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But Have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavvo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the Jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavvo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavvo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavvo radio tech at www.lavvo.com/twert.
And thanks to Lavvo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. You can go to the website and go straight to the radio products at lavvo.com/twert. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack. Chris Tobin is here. Joined us about halfway through the show. Chris, I didn't get to ask how you doing and what's going on. And you had some kind of a internet outage there, right?
Oh, yeah, it was a goofy, of course, a switch failed in doing so. It took out the fiber feed, and then we found out that the other portion of the fiber feed that we thought was part of a ring, turns out it's not part of a ring. It's a single ending.
Oh, no.
So that made for an interesting conversation. So, to answer your question, though, that you did text me, I do have my Max Connect, but I was busy troubleshooting.
I thought you'd be busy, and I was just going to let you know, Chris, that there's this product that would help you out in such an emergency. It's called Max Connect. And I know, Chris, I'm just taking this advantage of you by saying this. Last week, you got yours? You got yours?
Right here. Here's my Go Kit.
Okay, in your Go Kit.
That cable and
I'll show you my Go Kit. Hang on. My Go Kit is an ammo box, by God, because America.
Yeah, but being in New York City with an ammo box on the streets,
could be bad. But I put my props in here, my angry audio props, but also, of course, the wall wart for the Max Connect, itself, two paddle antennas for the cellular network. It'll work. This one will work on either AT&T or Verizon, and two antennas for the 2.4 gig Wi-Fi, but usually I just plug right into it, so I don't have to do Wi-Fi. I go into I plug my laptop to the LAN connector.
I prefer doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that is Max Connect. So you may ask, well, isn't that just like a cradle point and a hotspot? Well, yeah, it is. But you know what? What's special? The SIM cards. Because the SIM cards that are in here, and you can get this from maxconnectwireless.com, you can get this with either one service or two, so you have two to choose from in case coverage of one is lacking in the area you happen to be doing a broadcast remote from. And you have a level of priority over everybody else except for first responders and maybe the FBI. Point is, you can be in a stadium full of people using their cell phones at halftime, and you get your full data. You get your 5 megabits per second, 10, whatever it is you've ordered and paid for. You get that with Max Connect. So you can be on the air when other people are on their phones going, you get the idea? And your emails or your sports updates are taking forever to download. Max Connect gets you through and just keeps right on going. This is a great idea. Because you're not just on regular AT&T or Verizon. You're actually on a separate, kind of like an NVMO. So your separate carrier that's got priority over others. Check it out. I really appreciate Josh Bohn, B-O-H-N, at bohnbroadcast.com. And his, there you go, Max Connect Wireless. Look at how Max Connect is spelled. It's goofy as all get out. So, because, you know, the regular spelling wasn't available. So I'll put a link in the show notes to Max Connect Wireless. Yeah, the NVMO is A plus wireless, and you get through when everybody else cannot. All right. That's how we did the show last week from Dallas, and Chris has done some shows with it as well. So we use that whenever we're on the road. All right. We're going to wrap it up here with a couple of tips of the week. And Hank, you got a riddle out there. Give us the quickie version. And what is the answer? I think maybe I know, but I could be wrong.
Why could I only do convergence between 11:30 and noon, Monday through Friday? Well, mm-hmm. to do convergence, you need to have a crosshatch generator. And me being, you know, 16 years old, I didn't have money to spend on stuff like that. So I would have to wait for Hollywood Squares to come on.
That was your crosshatch?
That was it. 3x3.
And you could only do it during wide shots of the 3x3 set.
There you go.
Of course. You couldn't, so you couldn't do it quick. When the contest. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, it'd be quick. It'd be quick. Now, see, I thought it was because maybe the only color show was on from 11:30 to noon. But you could. Oh. Yeah. But you can do convergence. Can you do convergence with a black and white incoming signal?
I guess you could. Yeah, you could. Actually, yeah. That's the best thing to use. Yeah. But you got to have, you know, a crosshatch.
Yeah. Yeah. Some kind of a, yeah. Wow. I know. I would not have guessed that.
You have to be about our age to even remember the show.
But, yeah. Oh, I love Hollywood Squares. My goodness. Yeah. Paul Lynde was a nut. Man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, gosh. All of them. Oh, my goodness. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for that good teaser. Chris, do you have a tip for us?
The tip, yeah, it was a real simple one. Recently working on in a transmitter room again, and realized that we overlook one thing when it comes to wiring, and that is the utility cords, the mains, the AC cords on a lot of the equipment, especially in racks that have a lot of density. So I would recommend and suggest label both ends at the equipment side and at the power outlet side. So you know that when you're unplugging or going to turn something off, you're turning off the correct equipment and not taking your transmitter or your video feed or audio feed offline. I only say that because I was working in a rack with somebody and they said, yeah, pull the cable, pull the plug on, blah, 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 outlet. I'm yanking on it now. I'm like, yeah, I don't think that's going to work. No, it'll be fine. It didn't work. We turned off the video modulator. It was good. So once again, we go back to the topic of labeling as always, but label the one thing we overlook, which is the power cord or the wall wart. Mm. I have a few, not in my bag today, but one of my kids, the little wall warts have P-Touch labels on them. People look at me like, what is that? Trust me, when you're plugging in the switches and doing stuff, you'll appreciate it on a remote. So it works out nicely. Speaking of remotes, before I forget, Hank, with the Sportscaster, I'm assuming you can do this sports pod in the field reporter position. In the camera position, correct?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
We have the three. You have the three hosts, right?
Oh, right, right. Oh, can you use a sports pod for the field reporter?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking? I suppose you could, but what most people do is, since the field reporter is usually down on the field, you know, 200 feet away, they usually put him on a wireless mic and then some form of wireless headphones that just shoot an audio feed down to his headphones. But you could use a sports pod. It would be kind of overkill, but could be done.
No, wouldn't be, because I'm talking sports. I'm talking spoken word. I had recently two talk shows I was working on location where the sports box would have been ideal, where I could actually have my three guests on one audio path, my host on the single field position, and then two other guests that were like working in and out that we had to produce, had to talk to them separately from the other guests, actually was an ideal setup. I was just thinking about it. I was like, gee, I wonder if I could do that. So that's why I was asking. So it wasn't sports related at all. It was if you're a talk station and you're doing stuff, it comes in handy.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be done. In fact, I'd like to show one thing, which is a new product that we came out with a few months ago. I think most of our viewers and listeners are probably familiar with our mini pod little headphone amp, which can be networked with, you know, Cat 5. It's the same Studio Hub standard. You can daisy chain a whole bunch of these things together and That way everybody gets headphones in the same place, or, you know, right where they want it.
Yeah.
Well, we came out with a bigger version called the Guest Pod 2. It's just like the little one, but it has talkback and cough buttons. And those come out on another RJ45 that you can connect any way you need to. The pinouts can be assigned by the user. That's done internally. And these things also be linked one to the next with Cat5, so you can daisy chain a bunch of them together. And since we had a lot of people asking for this kind of a thing that they could mount in cabinetry, we have the cabinet mounted version of it.
Nice. Like this.
So yeah. You just cut a hole in your cabinet and drop this thing in, and you're ready to go. Very simple.
And it takes both sides of both kinds of headphone plugs, country and Western.
Yes. Yeah, we have. Right. We got the quarter inch reliable kind and the 3.5 millimeter unreliable
breakaway
kind.
The breakaway kind.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. The breakaway kind. Yes. And
very
so those
cool.
are kind of new. I guess we'll have to, unless you want to go a little bit longer, talk about power clamp next time, or do you want to do that now?
I think we're going to have to talk about it next time because we are out of time.
Okay.
And I'm sorry we couldn't get to it. It's a great reason to bring you back just to talk about clean power and not killing your gear, and why power clamp is different from other solutions out there. So
we're going to
have to
do that
just tease
down
that.
The road a piece. That'd be good.
All right.
Okay.
I do have a quick 20-second tip of the week, maybe a little bit longer. And that is for us and engineers, sometimes we're called upon to burn a new operating system or a card that goes in a modern piece of equipment. For example, the folks that I work for at the Telos Alliance, a lot of their gear internally uses either a CF card, and that's becoming a little old hat now, but they can be very reliable because you can get some good industrial CF cards, or an SD card. We do have a few pieces of gear that work on SD card. And of course, at least speaking for the Telos Alliance where I work, the support department will be happy to sell you a new or upgraded CF card or SD card if that's what your system needs, if you're troubleshooting, and beyond just upgrading the application itself. But my suggestion is that you get a USB connected CF card capable writer and reader, and using a Windows app called A-Write, which is available on the Telos Alliance website or from our support department, you can accurately, perfectly burn a whole operating system yourself. And what, the support department at Telos, expediency is important, and it often is. And if you have something like this, and if you have the A-Write program, they'll get you the image to burn on there, and you can do that, and save yourself, the time of waiting for a shipment to come in. So I have used this recently to repurpose, some older, Axia gear, and I suggest you get one too. I think this one was about $12-$13 from Amazon, and certainly they're available. So, and that's a lot less, I think, than they used to be. The one caution I would give you, when you go to put a CF card into a CF card slot, you see it's got about 5,000 gold plated connectors in there. Oh my goodness, they are tee tiny and they are fragile. So I boogered one a few weeks ago putting a CF card in. I didn't have it quite aligned, and I bent a couple of pins, and that was bad news. So and some of the pins are longer than others because the ground ones connect quicker than the rest of them do. So when you put a CF card in one of these things, be careful, be gentle, and be careful. If you're having to force it, there's something wrong. Back up and try again. So that's my tip of the week. Chris, good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. No problem. It was great.
Next week, by the way, we've got we'll say goodbye to Hank in a second, but next week, we have a guy named Michael Goodman, and he has a cool product that I think is just the neatest thing for, podcasters, broadcasters with small studios and doing remotes. So we're going to check into Michael, and he's quite the inventor. So, he's going to have some other things to talk about too, Michael Goodman. But to this week, we had also quite the inventor, Hank Landsberg with Henry Engineering. Hank, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a delight talking to you for this hour.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Anytime, just give me a holler and I'll be here.
And next time you're with us, we'll talk about sine waves that aren't and should be.
So that's right.
Hey,
there you go.
I want to give a big shout out to our producer, Suncast. Once again, technical problems at the beginning, but he worked right through them. Oh my goodness. Suncast, thank you for solving those problems and getting things wrangled in quickly. And also I appreciate Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. I hope to see Andrew in a couple of weeks in New York City, and maybe I'll get to see Chris Tobin as well. So we'll see you next week with Michael Goodman here on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everyone.